This episode of the Citadel Cafe is brought to you by listeners like you. Visit patreon.com/thecitadelcafe to find out how you can become a patron and help make this show possible. This is the Citadel Cafe, episode number 228 for Wednesday, March 22nd, 2017. My name is Joel Duggan, and the Citadel Cafe is where I hang out with my friends and we talk about geeky stuff. Lou Page is here. Hi, Lou.
Howdy.
We are fresh-faced and positive on the onset of a 25-minute delay to the start of a show due to tech stuff.
Yup.
I know I have the explicit tag in this podcast. I can say shit if I want to, but for some reason there, I just decided to avoid
avoid the swears.
I find that it's more entertaining to come up with goofier words than swears. I find them more funny. It's more entertaining.
As I get older, I feel like I want to swear less, so that when I actually do swear, there is an emphasis and meaning behind them.
Yes. Yeah, like if you drop a big old F-bomb, you want everybody in the world to be like, what? Wow, Lou is really mad.
Yeah, no, when we first started doing Zombies Ate My Podcast, I basically never swore. And then something went wrong, or we played something that was really, really bad, or a movie was terrible, and I just was like, nope, this is bleep, 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 bleep. And it was like, and they were, and like, literally, like, we got emails afterwards that were like, boy, Lou really didn't like that, did he? And I was like, you know, there is meaning behind that word when you don't use it very often.
I think that's the thing. I find it difficult sometimes when you're dealing with, I don't want to skew and single out younger people, get off my lawn sort of stuff. But I do find, and I did it too, like when I was a teenager and when I was, you know, in university hanging out with quote unquote the boys, we were filthy.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not like we were being vulgar. It's not like we were doing, like, we weren't describing lewd or rude things. It was more just dropping, you know, shit and the F-bomb and stuff like that, like all the time. Like, but yeah. you're describing mundane stuff like breakfast.
Yeah.
You know, and you're right. You know, with overuse, it loses not all meaning, but it loses any kind of poignancy.
Yeah. I find, especially when I did writing for a while and I was writing articles about stuff, I was like, yeah, no, I can't use the language in which I speak in these articles, and I had to learn to speak differently. Mm-hmm. So that I knew how to write things and not use juvenile language. And I was like, now I feel like I can't swear anymore. it's even come up at work, because, you know, I work in an office environment. Most people in the office, there's very few F-bombs, but I've been in meetings where even my boss has dropped an F-bomb and we all go, oh. And I've done the same thing, and she just kind of smiles. And I was like, yeah, Louis's upset. Louis never says anything like that. Louis doesn't say boo. And I'm like, yeah, maybe.
Yeah. The last time, I don't usually lose my cool. I'm one of those people that gets kind of inward. I turn inward when I get angry. I just get silent, which I guess, you know, in terms of poignancy, has its own meaning, because I never shut up. So if I'm just kind of staring at you quiet, I'm probably upset about something.
Yep.
But very, very few times have I really lost my temper. And the last time, and I recall this very vividly, was 2 years ago. I was trying to sort out a tax situation, and I was on the phone with the Canada Revenue Agency. Now, normally, any agency that I've dealt with in Canada like that, like for student loans or taxes or registering a new company, they're all really nice, yet hamstrung by the system.
Yes.
This person would not listen to me. Like she kept on interrupting me. She kept on talking over me. And it was a lot of information about some very important stuff. And I was trying to just like recite back to her, like in a very concise, very short version of like, okay, so you've just given me a lot of stuff. I'm going to recant this to you. Like, so as far as I understand, you know, I start going and she just kept on cutting me off. And then I said like, look, I'm really getting frustrated here. Like, I need you to just kind of listen to me for a second. And then she cut me off again. And she raised her voice, and that was the end. And I was just like, all right, lady, you're going to get a fistful of this until you hang up on me, and I'm just not going to stop. And I just went ape shit. And like, I wasn't proud of myself after. I did not feel good after she hung up the phone. But man, the one thing that I regret not doing was asking her before I really got involved.
What her manager was.
Not the manager. Everybody would have an employee number for security purposes. They wouldn't get there. I don't want other than a first name, which may not be a real first name. They would have an employee number that you could then register a complaint with CRA and be like, look, this person was completely unhelpful and unreasonable. And it took me a long time to reach what was really a fairly straightforward solution to my problem. But man, look, I was shaking. I was so mad. And that was from a conversation over the phone, right? Uh-huh. Like I'm not a confrontation kind of person, but that's the last time I really, really lost my cool. And I was swearing. I find that when I know that I'm mad is when I start to slip, is because I'll swear, but then I'll also use like a non-PR word. You know, stuff that we would have thrown around the playground when we were kids, but that is really inappropriate now.
Yes.
You know, and like
I go ahead.
Go ahead. No, go for it.
I can say I had one of those moments myself recently, actually this weekend. We went to get a couple items at Sam's Club. My wife hits a Sam's membership through her work, and she was like, oh yeah, there's these two things that we needed to get, and it's cheaper for us to get them at Sam's Club. Let's just go over there. So we get there, put the two items in the carriage, get to the register, and they have a new policy there now. They don't want you to put your items on the belt. Someone came over, reorganized our cart so all the barcodes were up so that someone could just scan the items in the carriage and we didn't have to even take them off the belt. And I was like, oh, that's nifty. And the woman at the register who didn't flip everything was an older lady, and she looked at my wife and I had a hat on, like just a winter hat on.
Mm-hmm.
And I hadn't shaved, so I had like, you know, stubble and stuff. And she went, ma'am. And I went, you mean, sir? I've been mistaken for a woman before, usually on the phone. And I'll just shrug it off if I'm on the phone, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But it was like, you're looking at me. I am in a men's navy parka coat. I'm wearing a men's winter hat. And I have 5 o'clock shadow. I am not a woman. And I just went, you mean sir? And she goes, miss. And I went,
ho ho.
And I went, I started to frown. And Erica leans over and goes, my husband is trying to correct you. To which she said, whatever, ladies.
Oh man.
And at this point,
at that point, she clued in and she was just being a bitch.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. And the manager was right there, and the manager took one look at me, like bowed her head, and she scuttled off as fast as she could.
Yeah.
And I looked at my wife and I said, honey, I'm going to go start the car and bring the car around. And she went, I understand. She got back in the car and she goes, I got all the way up to the register. And I said, you do understand you just offended my husband, right? And she said, well, aren't you the prettiest like ladies couple or whatever? And my wife was like, I took everything for me to not go over the register and smash your face in. And I went, uh-huh. And I was like, that's just bad customer service. Yeah. Just in general. Like I tried to be like, smile it off and be polite. But I was like, oh my God, this is infuriating.
Yeah.
I think this lady thinks she's being funny, but she's not being funny. She's being obnoxious.
Oh, really though? It's one thing to make the mistake. And these days there's a lot going on where you could make that mistake.
Right.
But once you've been corrected, like, you should be 8 to 12 different shades of red and apologizing
be like, oh, I'm
out
sorry.
Your ass. Yeah. No, I totally agree. It's funny. I had something for a second I was going to add to that, and it has completely slipped my mind. But whatever. Mustn't have been important. you're talking about shopping, and I know what it was. Wednesday is normally the day that I end up going to get groceries, because I usually pop out on the weekends, and then by Wednesday, I'm usually out of the good stuff.
Right.
So one of the things that I do to kind of end this on a positive note is, whenever I have a good experience, like whenever I'm through what is really going to be one of the most mundane jobs on the planet, is ringing through people's groceries.
Right.
You know, it's a chore that no one really likes, I say no one, but there's not a lot of people out there that are just like excited to go grocery shopping. Like, and generally there's a long line. The grocery store that I go to right now is undergoing some major renovations. So everybody is kind of like grumpy by the time they get up to the front, because it took them forever to find something that's been in the same place for 10 years.
Right.
But when I, like today, her name was Kate. She was probably in university, you know, so she's that age. She was just pleasant, efficient, fun. She was able to carry on a real conversation, not like, hey, how are you today? Or like stuff like that. It was more about like, oh, did you get outside today? It's like, yeah, I totally did. I'm going to go for a run. It's like, I went for a run with my dog. Like, I mean, I know she has a dog. I know that she watched a documentary today. I know that she skipped out on class because it was sunny. Like, it just like all the different things that happened while she's bagging my groceries, you know, and ringing me through and doing all the club point stuff, like all the regular rigmarole. So on my way out, and this is not the first time I've done something like this, I went over to customer service and I got the attention of the lady behind there. And of course, they're never really quite happy to see you. They're looking at you like, okay, this guy's got two full bags of groceries. And he's now standing at me, and I'm tall. I have a big beard right now. I was smiling, but like, they didn't seem to catch up on that. So she looked at me like, oh God, what's coming? And I said, hey, Kate at number 8, cause I always make a note of the checkout that they're on, cause sometimes I forget their name or I get it wrong. And I just said, look, she's fabulous. Like, she's fantastic. Just I'm not sure if you're the manager or if somebody else is, but like, let them know. And she just kind of nodded and said, oh yeah, I know Kate's amazing. It's like, well, good. Tell other people, you know? And then I went on my way. It took me 10 seconds, you know, to do that. And hopefully, I don't know.
And you maybe probably Kate, made somebody's day.
God, I hope Kate gets a raise. Like, you know, she's got to be working for minimum wage. Like, that's gross, you know? She's got classes to deal with and a puppy that she has to walk. Like, come on, give the kid a raise. Anyway, if you're going to the superstore in Portland Street, people, try to find Kate at number 8, which rhymes, and I don't know why that didn't dawn on me until just now. Anyway, so I want to kick things off with you. I feel like I've been chatting for a while here. What have you been watching since the last time we had you on the show?
So I've been watching Iron Fist, which I understand you have not. So I will try and keep this without too much spoiler.
No, I appreciate that. And I think that because it just came out, I know that people tend to binge Netflix stuff, but it came out like last Thursday or Friday or something?
Friday.
Okay. So just out of curiosity, have you seen the whole thing?
Yes.
Wow. Okay. So you went through the whole, you really got into it.
Yes.
So I'm going to suggest that we stick to what you can remember from just the first episode. Because I doubt that that's very spoilery, because Netflix tends to take a long time to get going with these things.
Well, the one thing I will say is all the acting is on par. It's
good.
All really pretty good. There's been some criticism of the main character. I don't see I think the issue isn't his acting. I think it's the script.
Right.
And
we are dealing with a comic book superhero. So like there's some tongue in cheek happening. Yeah.
My biggest gripe right off the bat is you're introduced to the villains right away, or who will be like all those Marvel shows where they're kind of bad guys, but they're not bad guys kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
You're introduced to the Meachums, and at every turn, they never get better. It's like, okay, best comparison, Elektra from Daredevil.
Yes.
It's like that,
right?
But with a whole family.
Right, okay. So she's a very narrow character.
Well, it's a whole family. There's four. There's three of them.
Right. So, but I'm saying Electric is very narrow. So you're saying that they're like this family. These roles are very narrow.
Yes, and you keep waiting for the characters to make a change or make a turn or whatnot, and it's like no, they keep making the same mistakes or they keep. And if anything, I would say they're probably the thing I liked least about the show.
Okay.
He is a superhero, is awesome.
Cool. Okay.
The fighting scenes are awesome. In fact, I'd say they hit you with a minor light fight, like in the first 5 minutes.
Cool. Because he's a kung fu master, right? Like, I mean, you kind of expect there to be some action right off the bat. You know, was Daredevil like that? There was fighting pretty soon.
Yes, right off the bat. I mean, the rest of the episode, there's no fighting, but like. In the first, there's a fight in the beginning and a fight at the end.
Well, that's a nice way to bookend it though. Like, I mean, you don't want to start in with like, well, here we go, yet another superhero origin story. There's a lot of walking in the desert, and there's a lot, you know, a lot of talking and people that are missing him when he's not around. It's like that would be old if they didn't start with like, okay, here's a cool fight scene. You're gonna get more of that later. But first, you kind of have to understand who the guy is, you know. Like, yeah. So I appreciate that.
My biggest complaint about the whole series, without a whole lot of spoilers, he has been missing for 15 years.
Well, that was in the trailer,
right? And he's been at a monastery somewhere learning kung fu, right? And they only do like four little flashbacks of it, and they're all of him as a little kid. Or him doing this one thing that's sort of like uninteresting. You never really see where he really was.
Okay.
And you never and they don't really tell you a whole lot more. You always get him telling you a story about there, but you never actually see much of it in any flashbacks. And I'm like, I'd like to know more about why he was there. Like, I would have loved to have seen an entire episode dedicated to like some kind of story about while he was there. So that you as a viewer could appreciate him walking around New York City again. You know what I mean? Like, they've done stuff like that. Like, there was that whole episode of Daredevil where he's almost the whole episode is him as a kid with a stick.
Right.
I was waiting for that moment in Iron Fist and it never happens.
Hmm.
And I was like, it feels like a missed opportunity.
Yeah, it's hard because there's a lot of parallels. I mean, I don't know anything about Iron Fist. The majority of my knowledge comes from like a podcast I did a while ago with Brockett, where he kind of explained like who he was and where he come from, what he does and all that kind of stuff. And I don't know that I necessarily need yet another kung fu training montage.
No, but your only answer as to him being the Iron Fist is he just keeps telling people, I'm the Iron Fist. And they go, what's that? Okay. What's that? And he tells them what it is. And you're like, well, and he talks about having getting his power, but they never show you getting his power.
Right.
Not that they need to, but he keeps talking about it. And you're like, well, if he's going to keep talking about it, maybe they're going to show me it. Yeah. And they never do.
Yeah. So, I mean, and there's, on one hand, I appreciate a little bit of mystery.
Right.
On the other hand, if you're going to mention it all the time, it's like, I can't remember the name of this tool, but it's like when you mention like something in a line of a script, you're like, oh gosh, I wonder what could possibly be coming from over that mountain. And the next scene in the movie is what's over the mountain, you know, yeah. Like, so, you know, but the characters in the movie don't know.
Right.
And it's frustrating because we're used to that kind of visual and like the visual storytelling and filmmaking, but then when they say it and then they don't do it, like you don't get that next step. It's like someone walking up to a balloon with a pin and just not punching it. You're just like, just poke it. Just do something. Don't hover there with your needle looking at the balloon sinister. You know, like just that kind of stuff I can see getting frustrating.
The one thing I will say, that no spoilers, when it was over, I was like, okay, so Defenders?
Okay, cool.
When am I getting Defenders? That was kind of my thought when it ends.
Well, I think the other thing, too, that we have to remember about all this stuff is that Daredevil is the main character. Daredevil is a pretty strong character. I feel like Jessica Jones and Luke Cage and Iron Fist, while cool, just out of my pop culture radar, they're team members.
Right.
You know, it's very similar to Black Widow and Hawkeye.
Hawkeye.
You know, like, yeah. I mean, Hawkeye's got his own series now, but like there's not TV series, comic series, but like when you think about the Avengers, you don't think about those guys as showrunners. You think Iron Man, Hulk, Thor, Captain America. Like you think, right, the big guns, right? And I mean, even then, the Defenders are like the second team.
Right.
So these are the second stringers on the second team. So I don't have super high expectations. My main concern going into it is trying to unsee Lancel from Game of Thrones.
Very easily.
Oh,
very
really?
Very easily. He pretty much has a beard through most of it.
Okay.
And he's in pretty much like street clothes through most of it, like, okay, dirty street clothes. So
good to know.
He's a very, very different character. And I didn't realize that the actor was British, because he's got that, he nails that American accent.
Oh, does he have a British accent in Game of Thrones?
I don't think so, but I think there's a hint of it, but I don't think it's completely like Americanized.
Hmm. Yeah, I haven't. It's been so long since I've.
Like, he doesn't have a whole lot of dialogue in Game of Thrones.
No, he doesn't. No, he doesn't. He just plays not the king, but the guy that wants to be king.
Right.
Yeah, and he's. Well, I think he's. Is he dead in Game of Thrones? Spoilers.
Yes.
I mean.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, he is.
Because they blew up
last season.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Anyway, it's one of those things where. There's so many characters in that show and so many actors that are British can do such phenomenal North American accents that I find it hard to pin down. But I mean, I'm going to check it out. I'm definitely going to.
I enjoyed my time with it. It's not my favorite.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think Daredevil is going to be the top of my Marvel Netflix list for quite some time. I really like Jessica Jones. I liked Jessica Jones more than Luke Cage, I think, actually. I liked Luke Cage, but Luke Cage got long for me.
My gripe was Luke Cage is really good, but those last like two episodes are kind of like, I get what they were where they were going and what they were doing, but like those last two episodes were kind of like, man, these could have been pushed together into one episode.
And, yeah, I mean, it got long in the tooth.
Yeah.
Well, one of the other shows that I know that you've been watching, and I'm not up to date, but I have watched the first season, is The Expanse. And I really liked the first season because of all the things that we complain about on The Citadel Cafe with tropes and, you know, just writers talking down to their audience and all this kind of stuff. The Expanse exemplifies the exact opposite, I found, with season one. It's got a unique take. There's this crazy world building with Earth and Mars and what are the miners called?
Belters.
So like, I mean, there's got these three different kind of factions, political and social and stuff like that. And there's a government body that's involved and stuff. And like, it's been a while since I've seen season one, but I loved it. It was so good. And scary. Like it brought peril back to outer space.
Right. And season two, I'll tell you right now, season two is basically everything you wanted from season one but didn't get.
Okay, cool. Because I like season one.
Exactly. But any shortcomings in season one are fixed right off the bat in season two.
Hmm, interesting. I wonder if, are you talking like maybe some budget stuff, or is it just like...
Story-wise,
so maybe they...
Like any punches that felt like they pulled in... Or anything that they felt like they didn't explain enough in season one.
Right.
Like right off the bat in season two, they go, oh yeah, by the way, this, 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 and this. And you go, oh,
okay,
I didn't even realize that. Awesome.
Nice. Okay, cool. Because I had some questions after season one. I don't remember what they were, but I was okay with that. Like I was okay with not knowing and kind of like, well, I kind of, because I don't think, correct me if I'm wrong, did we ever go to or see Mars in season one?
No.
Okay. So that I thought was really cool because they always talk about it. They don't talk about it in a very good way. Like they tend to, all the people tend to kind of frown on Mars or worry what Mars is up to.
In the books too, they never go to Mars. At least as far as I am in the books, I'm on book four. They never go to Mars.
Maybe
they deal a lot with Mars. They deal a lot with people from Mars, and they deal a lot with different things. And characters go to Earth and stuff. Nobody ever goes to Mars.
Yeah, I feel like where were we? We saw the belt or the Belter's base.
Yeah.
What was that spot? Do you remember what that was called?
Eros is right. The one that gets infected, and then Ceres Station is where Miller's from.
Right. Okay. And is Miller the detective?
Yes.
Right. Okay. Yeah. So look, it's all coming back to me now. Like it's been a while. I should go back and like rewatch the last couple episodes of the last season before I start the new one.
Yeah.
Just to kind of refresh my brain. But I love the visual storytelling of it. I thought like the silence and space and like the, it's not like super high tech, you know?
No. And one thing that my only gripe about the show and the books, having read the books now, is the show does not do a very good job of explaining to you how long it takes to get anywhere. In the books, when they're trapped in that in the first season, there's that moment where they're trapped in their broken ship after their ice hauler gets blown up and they're waiting for help.
Yep.
In the books, they're trapped in that empty ship for 6 weeks.
Wow.
In the show, it's like 10 minutes and they get picked up by a Martian thing. And you're like...
That's right,
I get that they have to speed this stuff up for TV. I just feel like there is a way that they could explain that, oh no, these guys have been stuck in this thing for forever, you know?
Yeah.
And sometimes when they travel in the show, it's like, bam, and they're back at the station. And in the book, it's like, yeah, that was 6 weeks.
Or right.
That was a week's travel because it takes a really long time to get anywhere in space. And in the show, they kind of just go, oh yeah, and we're there. And you're like, I understand, but you could do a better job of explaining that it took time to get there.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and that's one of the things that you can do so well in books. And it sounds like the author is like really trying to emphasize like one of the biggest perils in space is just the fact that it's space. Like, you know, that seems to be one of the biggest nemesis, you know, in the whole thing.
Right.
So I really have to get back to it. I've been too distracted.
And I will say right now, where the first season ends is midway through the first book. It's not even the whole first book, story-wise. Right. And by the middle of season one, they're at the end of the first book. By the mid-season, I won't say mid-season finale because they kept running them, but there was like they took like 2 weeks off and then went back to running more episodes.
Right.
And like that mid-season was, oh yeah, that's the end of the first book. And you're like, oh, like as a reader, I was like, oh, so they're not going to drag this out. They went right to the, and literally the following episode, they step right into where the second book begins. And you're like, okay, they're not hesitating.
Well, one thing that they might do, and I don't know how many episodes are into season two right now?
I think they're up to 9 or 10 out of 13.
Oh, geez. Wow. It's almost over. One of the things that they started doing with Game of Thrones, which I really liked, which worked better as a TV show, is they started taking stuff that took books and books to write and they started overlapping everything.
Yeah.
And it makes more sense in a television situation to tell the story that way, as opposed to long stints without certain characters. And
right.
Especially because those characters are fan favorites. But more so because they're also the more interesting characters in the show. And I'm wondering if maybe they'll start going back with The Expanse in terms of the timeline and maybe either explain stuff or start to show things like going back and forth.
Okay. This really isn't a spoiler because it's not really a plot point.
Mm-hmm.
But in the show and the books, they keep making reference to the space drives that they use to get places and the Epstein drives. There's an episode in the second season where they just, in between what's going on with the main characters, even though this has absolutely nothing to do with the plot, they tell Epstein's story and how he created the drive in between points of what's going on in the show.
Weird.
And you're like, in the book, it's like a paragraph. They explained it it's literally like a paragraph. Somebody says something about an Epstein drive and they're like, yeah, he's on that. His body's making that cruise through the galaxy to where he'll never come home or something like that. And that's like all you learn about him is that supposedly he made the first drive and it killed him and his ship is still out there. And that's all you know. And you're like, oh, okay. And in the show, they spend almost half an episode telling you his story and how he got stuck in this ship and how he died. And you're like, it's just not something you see in regular TV.
Hmm.
And it's interesting. And there is a weird tie-in to the episode, but the tie-in is really to explain something about science to you. It's not really his story is going to change the way things work in the show. It's that something comes up about science, and then after having watched him die, you go, oh, okay, I understand what they're trying to tell me about science. And it's a unique thing that you don't see in TV in general, let alone sci-fi.
Yeah, and I think The Expanse is definitely one of those unique shows that that I understand. It's funny that I know my circles are excited about it. Like, I hear about it on other shows, other podcasts that I listen to, and other, you know, I see people talking about it on Twitter. But because I'm a cord cutter and because I'm just not tied to the TV because of my schedule right now, I've just not been, like, champing at the bit to watch it.
Right.
I'm sure I mean, it's also been nice weather around here the last little while. It's been sunny and, like, 3 or 4 degrees. So, like, I've been trying to go outside as much as I can. But sooner or later, the spring rain is going to happen, and I'll be able to check it out. The other thing, what was I going to talk about? The Expanse. Oh, Man in the High Castle. So to kind of show you just how distracted I've been, I started watching the second season of Man in the High Castle. I really, really like it, but I've only watched like 3 or 4 episodes and I stopped. Mm-hmm. And I was like, so why am I not returning to this? I like it. I have it. I have access to it. So what's going on? Well, it turns out right now what I want to do when I'm not working or taking care of, you know, adult responsibilities like laundry and dishes and stuff is playing Minecraft. I don't want to say it's a problem because I don't do it when I should be working. Like I don't skip my workouts. Like But I will certainly play from 10 o'clock at night until midnight or later, you know, mm-hmm. and enjoy it. And I don't necessarily know that I'm accomplishing anything with it. Like, I'm building a giant sculpture thing, but it's not... Like, last night I logged in, and I decided, okay, I've kind of had it up to my eyeballs with this snake sculpture. Like, I need a break from it just to kind of, like... I also needed to gather some materials and stuff. So I decided to follow some of the tutorials that I've been watching online. I'm still watching Paul Soros Jr. Minecraft tutorials on YouTube. They're really entertaining. And at one point I kind of stopped because I was like, oh, he's now farther ahead in the game than I am in terms of like exploration, the tasks that he's doing. And I was like, okay, so I know how to mine. I know how to get stuff. I know how to build stuff. I know how to build vertically. Like, I mean, I've kind of grasped all this stuff. I'm learning how to farm and feed myself and whatever. But then he starts finding these things called ravines. So, I mean, it's not spoilers because Minecraft has been out forever. I'm the noob. And then he went into this ravine and he was looking in like abandoned mine shafts. And at one point I thought like, that's really cool. But I felt immediate, like, you know, kind of a sense of kind of sadness. Like, oh, that would have been really cool to discover on my own, you know? Mm-hmm. And it clicked because I was like, wait a minute, I've seen one of these. So I went in the game to find what I thought was going to be a ravine, and it was a fake out. It was not a very big ravine. There was no real resources in them. They're supposed to be resource rich. But anyway, but then the other thing that he did, which would not be a spoiler because of course his Minecraft world that was generated is vastly different than mine, was get on a boat and travel to see some other stuff and get some other resources. Because what I find so fascinating, and what I did not know about Minecraft, this was an assumption that I had made, was like, yeah, okay, I've seen it. There's grass, there's dirt, there's trees, there's rocks. You chop them down, you build stuff. Like, I mean, I get it, you know, from someone that didn't play. I didn't realize, and this might be new to the game in recent years, but I didn't realize that there was different biomes. So you can have a desert, you can have a mountain, you can have swamp, you can have jungle, you can have icy plains, and like all kinds of stuff. I didn't realize that, mainly because my draw distance in the game is not very big.
Right.
So like I have to kind of be in the valley to see the mountain. I'm not going to see the mountain from across the map. Was one of the reasons why I decided to build Snake Mountain, where I'm building it, is because I was walking through the valley and I looked up and I was like, wow, okay, that's a really cool waterfall. I'm going to do something with that. Let's just take a closer look, you know, which is kind of part of the fun. So I got in the boat and I sailed the boat. I say sailed. There's no sail. It's a rowboat. You go very fast, by the way. You're one hell of a rowboat person in Minecraft. I get in the motorboat rowboat and took off. After I kind of sorted out like how to survive, all this kind of stuff, neglected to make a bed. So when I did eventually get my ass handed to me, I lost all the things that I had and had to start over again. So I was like, okay, so I'm not going back there again until I'm no longer mad.
Right.
But the next time I went, I went and I built a farm and I built kind of like a little homestead so I can actually have a place to kind of like branch out from.
Mm-hmm.
But man, the game is vast and just, it's scratching an itch that I've just not had for a long time, which is one, video games, two, just building stuff and collecting stuff. And
now, are you playing this on your Mac?
I'm playing it on the Mac and okay. I'm playing on, Steven's, family's server. So we were talking about playing together,
okay.
Two ways to do that. You know, we could be at one another's houses and he just lives down the road. Or he could use his free trial for 1 month of a Minecraft realm. And his boys, he's got a 10 and a 12-year-old, and they play Minecraft a lot.
Right.
And they're in the realm with us. So at first it was just me and Steven kind of like doing our own little adult stuff because we're both the same age. And then, you know, his boys joined, and it's awesome. But then all of a sudden it's like there's these two ginormous houses. Like, they built them in minutes from what I can tell, right? And they're huge. Huge, like they're 5, 6, 4, you know, block ceilings with giant pitch roofs and stuff. It's like when I build a house, it's 5x5 with a roof on it. I just need something to keep the rain off my head. I don't plan on spending a lot of time in there. Anyway, because we share the realm, I've been able to kind of walk around and explore. And we were the boys were not cultivating. What were they doing? They were herding animals. So they had cows and they had pigs and stuff like that. And I went and found sheep because I learned how to do that on YouTube. So, and then we didn't have any. So it took a long time to actually bring 2 days, as a matter of fact, to bring the sheep, back to the we'll call it the shard homestead. But in the process, I was just like, okay, what can I do? Like, is there anything that they have that I might be able to then like help me get the sheep here? So I was walking around and I realized that there's these three trap doors in the floor. I said, that's really weird. So true to form, as 10-year-old boys will do, they have these giant homes that are, I don't know, maybe 100 bricks away from one another.
Mm-hmm.
And there is a very intricate underground tunnel that connects them.
Of course.
Like, you could probably hit one with the other with an arrow, for starters. And then on top of that, both homes are big enough for all four of us to live in.
Right.
Yet the two brothers have connected their, you know, with a secret tunnel. It's like, that's so cool. Like, I really understand now why every kid I talk to that it is all into video games, like that's that age, is totally obsessed with Minecraft.
It's totally the thing if I was that age that I'd be into it. But what you're describing sounds a lot like work.
Yeah. It can feel like it, but there's something very satisfying about looking at Snake Mountain, which was nothing when I first met, and then seeing that I've built something now. Like, there's something really cool about that.
I can understand that. In a similar fashion, I've been playing a game called Stardew Valley.
Hmm.
It has a lot of comparisons to Minecraft in a different sort of way. The world is always the same, but you have to do things like grow a garden, have a carpenter upgrade your house, go talk to townspeople. There's a mine that you have to go down in to get minerals that you need to build the next thing that you need for your house. And it's very similar. But it's not not first person, and it's more along the lines of like a Super Nintendo game.
Right, okay.
And it is very low intensity. So when you do get tired of Minecraft eventually, if you're looking for something else to check out, I recommend Stardew Valley.
I'll have to look it up. I don't know that I have room for other video games.
Oh, no. No. I understand.
But I'm surprised. The other thing that really surprised me about Minecraft, because it was one of the reasons why I dismissed it, was the low-res graphics, like the particle stuff and the pixel things. But I've started to really appreciate both the simplicity of it and then the complexity of the game. Like once Paul Soares Jr. started getting into like crafting and potion making and the nether and everything else, it's like, okay, wow, this is, I'm almost wanting to stop his videos for a bit until I can really catch up and I need to do this stuff. Just because I kind of want to discover some things on my own, which is also the frustration with Minecraft is that there's no real instruction. So like, if you don't know that when you craft in the game, you get like a 9x9 grid. And if you don't know that three pieces of wood on the top, three books in the middle, and three pieces of wood on the bottom actually make a bookshelf, like there's no way to know that. You know, you have to go look it up on the wiki. And
of course,
part of me is like, I don't go looking on the wiki unless there's something very specific that I know I can build and I don't know how and I need to build it. And it's just like, okay, I've tried a couple times and I can't quite figure this out. Let me go refresh, or I know how to build it, or I saw it built, and yet I have to refresh my memory. So I'll go to the wiki for that kind of stuff. The other thing I did when I was doing my, my Snake Mountain was I looked up all the different, materials that you could build with, 'cause I wanted to find the darkest that would be readily available. Turns out it was actually just stone. It was just like just cooking the cobblestone that you get back into solid stone is actually is a decent dark gray, and it's everywhere. So when you need a lot of it, it's good. But I was looking at other things, and like obsidian is black, and that's really hard to get. Nether brick is like a red black, and that's also really hard to get. So there's very limited kind of dark resources. Everything else seems to be pretty light. My only complaint about the art in the game is really the glass. I don't use glass for hardly anything unless I have to, because the default textures are garbage. It's not good at all. But I've also discovered that there are a lot of texture packs that you can do. And skins, which I didn't realize. So, of course, the artist in me is like, oh, sweet. So all I have to do is download this, like, 64x64 pixel image, which is tiny, and edit it to make it look however I want. So you can bet your butt that I am currently Skeletor making Snake Mountain, which was a lot of fun. I mean, I downloaded it. I didn't do it from scratch. I edited it because it wasn't the right color, and it wasn't the classic Skeletor that I remember from when I was a kid. But that to me was like, okay, I can't really see myself in the game. I don't play third person. I play first person. But just the fact that when, you know, Steven and the boys ran into me last Friday night, we played online together, and Steven got it immediately. He was like, oh, wow, that's cool. Like, because he knows what I'm building. He's like, so that's, you know, stuff like that I find really entertaining. And there's a lot of stuff in the game that I didn't realize, like emoting and stuff like that when you're doing multiplayer. And I had a lot of fun playing with Steven and the boys on Friday night. But one of the highlights was I can't remember which one. I think it was his younger, I don't remember their screen names either. But the younger brother fell from a very high height. And when that happens, Minecraft lets you know. So brother one has fallen and died from a very high height. And I kid you not, like before I could finish reading that, brother two chimed up and says, is not surprised. It's just like, that's like the relationship between the tunnel underneath the houses and And the comments in the chat just had me just in stitches on Friday night. And I think that's probably one of the things I like so much about it is that in a world of video games where everything is really competitive, like the other games that I play are Hearthstone, Heroes of Warcraft, not Heroes of Warcraft, Heroes. What's the other one? I feel like there was, World of Warcraft, and that's not super competitive, but like anything that I have access to that's a short kind of stint that I don't have to pay for long-term is really competitive. And I don't have the time to practice to be good.
Right.
Right? So, and I feel like in your kind of track record on the Citadel Cafe, I feel like you've mentioned a lot of single-player games.
Yes.
Yeah.
I am not a competitive... I'll play a round of Overwatch. If I'm in the car and I'm not driving, I'll play Hearthstone or something. Mm-hmm. Or if I'm waiting in a line, I might play a round of Hearthstone. And I can handle it something competitive for about an hour, and then eventually it loses me. I'm very story driven, and so I end up finding something that has a good story that's single player that I don't need to worry about other people. I don't need to converse with other people. I can just do my thing and kind of relax.
Yeah.
Being competitive does not relax me at all.
No. No, I mean, I have fun with Heroes, Heroes of the Storm, but not for a long time. Like, after three matches, if I'm not doing very well, I don't tend to have any more fun.
Yes,
and it's not
exactly.
And it's not because I'm worried about sucking. Like, personally, I don't care. I there's a disconnect where I know I don't play enough that I don't have really high expectations of
right.
my play. The problem is that game you're playing with five friends, hopefully. Five strangers just get mad at me. I ignore them. I really don't care. But when I'm playing with like Mike O'Day and my other friend John and some other folks, I feel like I'm holding them back with the things that they want to accomplish. And then I feel like, well, are we losing because we suck and they were that much better? Or does our team have a real heel me that's not pulling the kind of weight that I could be? And that to me is like, well, that's just one more. It's not stressful, but it's like, it's not exactly relaxing either.
Right.
But with Minecraft, something I like the in-game music is kind of fun. I turned it off after a while. But I've been plugging in like some ambient stuff on YouTube, some jazz, and just kind of like leaning back and be like, sweet. So the only thing I have to worry about is being outside at night. I don't like combat in Minecraft. I am not very good at it. I find it very frustrating. It's not something I feel like with the amount of time that I've spent in the game, I should have at least grasped how this is happening. Now, I have a bit of a skew where I'll watch, you know, these Minecraft tutorials and he'll kill a skeleton with like three swings. I'm just like, it takes me nine.
Right.
I have the same sword. It's not like I've got enough sense to know, like, okay, I'm not using a wooden sword with him, with his iron sword. Like, I understand that I have the right tool for the job, but it's very, very frustrating. And when I die a lot, I quit because I've been playing for a couple hours probably and it's time to go to bed or whatever. Like, it's a really good sign that it's no longer time to play Minecraft.
As soon as it stops being fun, it's time to go away.
Yeah, when I get a little bit frustrated, you know. But at the same time, it's like when you die, like you still have to play for five more minutes because you have to go get your stuff. Because when you die, you drop everything. And if it's not
right.
somewhere where you can't get it back, you're like, well, that is just over the hill. You know, so I've got contingency plans everywhere. There's chests everywhere, and they're all armed to the teeth. So when
mm-hmm.
I die, it's like, all right, where's the nearest armory? I need my shit back. and by the time I get there, whoever killed me is gone. Ironically, what kills me the most is little zombies, the little ones. They're terribly cute, but terribly deadly. It's kind of an oxymoron. Because, you know, zombies, they make that kind of noise,
yep.
or that rumble. Well, these ones do it, but they sound like children. So they're like, and they're not like sheep. They almost, it's like they put like an auto-tune on them. So,
right.
You know, and they jump around like little hops. It's almost like Ewok zombies. Like, it's really kind of adorable. except for they're like World War Z zombies. They're fast. I am not fast.
Right.
It's very frustrating. Like, I laughed at myself, which is part of the fun, when I was dealing with two of these little buggers. And my solution was dig a hole in the wall behind me and wall it off. So I get in there. It's like, sweet, I'm safe. And you're like, well, I'm in a hole. Like, I don't know what to do. The zombies are outside. I can't go that way. So you turn around, you dig. It's just like, all right, well, solution? I am a chicken shit.
Right.
But I had a bunch of stuff on me that I just mined, and I cannot figure out how to kill these guys. And I mean, I know how. You hit them with the sword, but yeah, good luck with that. I find that the videos that I've been watching make everything look very easy. It's like, all right, so I don't know what it is. I've never liked melee in first-person shooters.
Mm-hmm.
So that is, like, because I've got a sword
for my main defense. I'd say the only game that I like that in is the Elder Scrolls games.
See, I didn't like that very much. I used a bow in that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I wasn't a big fan. I mean, I liked the adventure of it. I have a kind of an odd relationship with Elder Scrolls. Skyrim was the one that I tried.
Yes.
And I didn't like the design of the characters, but I also I also didn't like the, like you said, the melee. I was dependent on the bow very quickly. As soon as I could find one, I used one.
Right.
Yeah, which is weird because I wanted to be the great big guy that had an axe. But then once I realized that, well, one, I can't make myself really big in this game. And then two, I was just like, well, it's really difficult to hit something. You'd think with a giant axe, like the size of a watermelon, you'd think I'd be able to hit the bad guy. No, not so much. Joel and melee and first-person shooter do not mix. Which is funny because I spent quite a number of years playing Call of Duty and Medal of Honor, when I was younger. And like, I was a pretty good shot. Like, I was a sniper in those games. I wasn't the guy with the machine gun or the bazooka running around. Like, I was the guy with up in the bell tower, really like, yeah, you're sticking your head out there. I just need you to take one more step, And right. Like, that to me was really fun. But in Minecraft, I can't hit the broadside of a barn. It's kind of a disappointing. But anyway, so that's, I mean, I haven't watched anything since the last time I was on the show. I've just been playing Minecraft. Well, I lie. I've been watching the YouTube stuff. So I've not been watching television. I've been basically diving into YouTube, which is...
Be careful, Joel. I might have to call you a millennial soon.
Yeah, look. nothing will make me switch the YouTube channel faster than somebody that starts off the video going, yo, yo, yo. And it's like, nope, I don't care how much information you have for me. I am not listening to you. So I've been looking for some Minecraft streamers that might, or video people that might be less annoying, but so far only Paul Soares Jr. has been the guy that I've found. I'm thinking I'm actually streaming some Minecraft on Twitch. People seem to really enjoy when I streamed the Lego builds.
Right.
So I'm going to try it because I'm spending enough time in it. I might as well at least hang out with people. And Steven can't play all the time. He's got a regular, regular day job. Growly Bear is giving me a shout out in the chat room saying that I'm a stormtrooper in melee games. Yes. Yeah, that is exactly my problem. But anyway, that brings us into the Internet Minute, which is, of course, brought to you by, you. This is where I get to talk to you about Patreon, and that is patreon.com/thecitadelcafe is where you can go to check out our Patreon page. It's an excellent way for you to support the show. If you are enjoying the content and you'd like to give a little bit back, then you can do that. It's completely up to you. Any kind of sign up at all gets you access to the Slack chat, which is just a handful of patrons who are already supporting the show, hanging out and talking about all the same things we talk about on the show during the week in a chat room. I find it really, really fun. Iron Fist was in there. Logan was in there. We talked about a whole bunch of stuff. There was a cosplay monster makeup humanoid Lego minifig in there today. That was terrifying. So... granted, I know that you can Google this. I feel like if you went to patreon.com/thecitadelcafe and considered becoming a patron, you could be on the cusp of these conversations and seeing the reactions of Phil Rude when that was shared in the chat room. So I think that alone would be worth it. I think checking out Phil's reactions in the chat would be worth it on its own. But check out patreon.com/thecitadelcafe, and I thank you very much because the money that comes in from that helps keep the show on the air, hosting costs, websites, all that kind of stuff. So I've got a pick this week, and I was super excited when I got home on Friday. I've been holding my breath on this because I wanted to talk about it on the show. I had mail. I was like, sweet. I don't remember ordering anything. So I had no idea what it was. And it was an envelope, but it felt like a book. And I thought, eh, somebody's probably sent me, you know, like a catalog or something like that.
Right.
And since I started Forge Publishing, I have received a number of catalogs from, like, you know, print suppliers and paper samples and stuff like that.
Right.
So I looked at the mailing label, and it was Barbara Perez was the name. I was like, that, like, it sounds familiar, but still it was not ringing a bell.
Right.
And for good reason, because it wasn't, it's not the main, she's not the main person, but what it is, it's a book. It's called En Voyage, An Illustrated Journey. It's by Lissy Marlin, who we interviewed on Comics Coast to Coast in episode 205. I'll have the link in the chat, in the show notes for that. Or you can just Google Comics Coast to Coast 205. I found it easy enough. Anyway, she did an Indiegogo, and there'll be a link to that as well. I tried my damnedest before the show to find out when the Indiegogo was actually running. The estimated delivery for the book was November 2014. So now it's March 2017. I'm just getting it now. There were a number of delays that I just stopped keeping track of. I know it was coming whenever I emailed Barbara Perez, who was the editor. She was always very kind and very upfront with, like, you know, letting me know where they were, what hiccups there were, and what was going on, etc. And I think it just comes with the perils of, you know, I say perils, the challenges of a huge project that is very successful, but is a passion project, and there's really only two people working on it, you know.
Right.
And one of those people is a full-time illustrator for Scholastic and a couple of other companies that Lissy Merlin works for. And man, like, it just, you know, I understand, because I mean, I'm making these things now, how long they take. And for it to only be them working on it, this is a thick book. Like, I didn't check the page count. I don't remember exactly how many there was supposed to be, but it's, you know, 146 pages, give or take. It's beautiful. It really is fantastic. I'm sure they are in the throes of fulfilling the Indiegogo. I'm probably not the first person to get the book. I'm probably not the last person to get the book. What
right.
I hope they do very soon is give me a link where I can point people so that they can buy it. Because I tried to find that before the show too, and the only thing I can find is Lissy's website and then the Indiegogo. There's no store, you know, to buy it. I did not check Amazon. We ran into some tech difficulties that delayed my research. But it's called En Voyage, Envoyage. I really highly recommend doing some searching and see if you can find it. It's Lissy Marlin, Marlin, two S's in Lissy. You can find her. It's just hername.com. And she's got some beautiful illustration up there. And of course, links to social media and all that kind of stuff. But thank you, Lissy. And thank you, Barbara. This is fantastic.
The artwork just from the Indiegogo page, it's absolutely gorgeous.
Oh,
so.
she is ridiculously talented. And basically, I should really explain what the book is. She traveled in Europe for 3 months, and she talks about that on the podcast with Comics Coast to Coast. She traveled through the Netherlands, France, and one other place in May and June of 2013. And while she was there, she did a lot of sketching, a lot of note-taking, and a lot of writing. And then she turned it into this book when she got back. And it just, like, part of the process was it was not a finished book. It was not a number of paintings being collected into a book. She was going to make the book based on her research trip.
Right.
So that's one of the reasons why I think it took, I don't want to say a long time. It took some time to complete. But you can just tell from holding it and looking at the layout and the design of the thing that it is a labor of love and really, really pretty artwork. So whenever I have an opportunity to give another independent artist a shout out, I always do. So Lissy Merlin, En Voyage. That is my pick for this week. What's your pick this week, Lou?
My pick this week is, as of this afternoon, Netflix has officially released their trailer for the new reboot of Mystery Science Theater 3000.
Okay.
I don't know if you were ever a fan of Mystery Science Theater 3000.
I've never heard of it.
Okay, basically, it was an old Comedy Central and Sci-Fi Channel show where there's a couple of robots and a guy, and there's kind of like a half-assed kind of dumb story where they're trapped in a space station or a science experiment, and this guy subjects them to really bad 50s and 60s and bad B-movies, and they have to sit through them. And so you see the movie with them in the corner, and they make fun of the movie the whole way through.
Okay.
And it's on Netflix, some of the old episodes. And the show has had several hosts. They ended it sometime in the late 90s, early 2000s. It got sold to Sci-Fi, and there was some issues with Sci-Fi, and it ended up going away. And Netflix, and they did a Kickstarter to bring the show back. And Netflix stepped in after they Kickstarter went through and bought the rights to air it on Netflix. And so fans have been waiting for about 2 years. And with the show that they brought back, it's got, give me 1 second and I'll tell you. It's got Felicia Day is in it. Patton Oswalt is in it.
Nice.
And the original creator, Joel Hodgson, is back, and he's like directing episodes and helped write most of it. And Jonah Ray from The Nerdist is playing the lead character.
Okay.
And basically, it's them sitting around watching bad movies
and making fun of them.
Yes.
Interesting. I'll have to give it a go. I mean, the fact that it's on Netflix means that I would have access in Canada, like if it's a Netflix
yes.
show, which is sweet.
And this is coming out next month.
Okay.
But the trailer was launched today.
Mm-hmm.
And if you watch the trailer, my big thing is I want to know what movies they're going to watch. Cause the original show, when you want to find episodes, you don't find the episodes by number. You find the episodes by what crappy movie did they watch this week.
Right.
And they haven't told anybody what they're watching yet. So
I wonder if there's going to be some people thrown under the bus.
You never know.
Are they going to do old movies? Or are they going to do
They usually do old movies. So I'm assuming that this is going to be old movies.
Okay. Although I'll guess at this point, there's a lot of movies kind of in our wheelhouse that would be considered old.
Yes. No, some of the stuff they covered before the show went off in 2000 was like from the 80s. And I was like, oh, yeah, I saw this on HBO. this is actually a movie.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, I've seen a number of things crop up in these B-movie things. Like, I think I rented that on beta when I was a kid. My parents obviously didn't keep very close tabs on me.
Yeah. And the original idea for the show was it was a like a local PBS channel show.
Right.
The creators had gotten access to like those copy-free like movies that are not copyright anymore.
Oh yeah, you can.
And so they were watching really crappy old movies and making fun of them.
Yeah.
And slowly Comedy Central picked them up and they got access to more movies. Whereas in Comedy Central's library, there's something like 300 episodes of this show, and you can only get access to about 40 or 50 of them due to licensing rights.
Oh my gosh!
So it was one of my favorite things as a kid, and you can't find some of the episodes. Some of the episodes I watched as a kid, there's like no way for you to find them. They don't exist anymore.
Right.
But Netflix has bought the rights to this, and it comes out next month. And I'm actually going to be on vacation when the show shows up. So I'm like, oh boy, I know what I'm going to do while I'm on vacation.
Nice. Yeah, right on. This looks really cool. I'm going to have to at least check it out. I'm not normally someone that can watch bad movies, but I've certainly
if
within the context of making fun of them, and that's the entertainment. Like, it's not the movie that you're watching; it's the,
right.
the critics that are making fun of it. Well, it's very similar. I'm going to give another shout out because Brian Dunaway is in the chat room to FilmSack, where they watch movies and then they do a podcast about how bad they were, and like that. I mean, I've listened to FilmSack, you know, a number of times, and I always get something out of that, even though the movie that they're talking about I might not watch. Like, I might not necessarily be able to stomach watching it on my own. But anyway, that brings us to the end of this episode of the Citadel Cafe. We record live every Wednesday night at 8 p.m. Eastern when the tech universe does not take a giant dump on my head. Today we started about a half an hour late, but normally it's 8 o'clock Eastern at thecitadelcafe.com/live. Our mobile audio stream is provided by alphageekradio.com, and the music for the show is composed by Kevin MacLeod. Email the show at thecitadelcafe@gmail.com. Find us by name on Twitter, Facebook, iTunes, and basically anywhere that you can think of that you might want to find us. My name is Joel Duggan. You can find everything that I am up to online at joelduggan.com. And while you're there, consider also visiting forgepublishing.com. We've got a couple of big announcements coming up. Piper's book is at the printers. Rob Momart's book is coming up on a Kickstarter date. We're trying to sort out some details in the background. The best way to be up to speed on everything is going to be the Forge Publishing newsletter, which I say is monthly, but I don't always get it out that often. So it's not like you're going to get a lot of spam. When you get some information from Forge, it's going to be poignant and hopefully something that you're interested in. So sign up for the newsletter and let me know what you think of what's happening over at forgepublishing.com. That's it. You can find me and my name on Twitter, Instagram, all that kind of stuff. Lou, where can people find you and your work online?
The easiest place to find me is on Twitter. I am at BusyZombieLord, and you can check out my show, Zombies Ate My Podcast, wherever you find your podcasts. We're on everything. So, and I will apologize if you are a listener to Zombies Ate My Podcast. We have had a lot of scheduling conflicts this month. People being sick, people being out of town, family emergencies.
Ryan last week, moved.
Last week my mom had heart surgery.
Oh, geez.
So we could not do a show. Everything is fine. My mother's fine. She had to have a pacemaker and a defibrillator put in, but I had to spend all day Wednesday with her, so I did not have time to prep for show.
No, I imagine.
We are going to be doing back on schedule, hopefully in the next week or two. We're going to do a show Friday night. So if you're a regular listener, we will be back on schedule probably in the next week or so.
Nice. Is your mom doing okay now?
Yes, my mom is fine now.
You left me hanging there.
She's getting used to a pacemaker and a defibrillator, but it was an emergency surgery that they literally, she went to the hospital Saturday night, and they were like, yeah, we'd like to do surgery now, but we got to wait until Tuesday. So she had to wait till Tuesday, and then Wednesday they sent her home. So
wow, jeez, yeah, that's heavy stuff. But I'm glad that she's still doing well. That's good.
Yes.
You've been listening to the Citadel Cafe, where we are fast, easy, and cheap, but you can only pick two. Brian, if you're still in the chat room and you can still hear us, how does the new Pop Filter sound? You've been on podcasts with me for years. Do I sound the same? Do I sound different? Is it good? Is it bad? I'm happy to not have a giant Pop Filter obstructing the view of my monitor. I don't have a sock monkey like you do. I wish I did. For anybody still out there listening, Brian's response was, Joel Duggan, I can hear you. You sound the same, however. Well, I guess that's good. I'm glad he added an extra descriptor there, because it wasn't a 0-1 situation. Brian, I was looking for some subjective feedback. Anyway, while I'm talking at you, and I can really ignore you because you're just in the chat room, I don't have to listen to you. We're really close to booking Will Henry for Comics Coast to Coast. We're just trying to sort out a date. He's the guy that draws Wallace the Brave, which is a fantastic comic.
This podcast recorded before a live internet audience. To learn how to listen and watch live, visit tunein.alphageekradio.com.